Today, the majority of the world's poorest people are living in economies that have not achieved economic growth in the recent past. Sustained and transformative economic development is the way out of this. And while this will no doubt be a tough challenge, there are plenty of examples from recent history of countries achieving sustained growth and as a result, reducing poverty. This is Ideas in Development, a VoxDev podcast on economic policy and research. Welcome to our first series, where we're going to be talking to policymakers from Latin America, Africa, and Asia who have direct experience in driving growth in their countries. Joining me on this journey is Kartik, the co-founder of Growth Teams. Kartik, welcome to Ideas in Development. Could you tell us a bit about yourself?
Of course, and thanks for giving me the opportunity to join you, Oliver. I've spent the last 15 years working on economic growth strategy in various organizations and roles. I've worked on the donor side of the table with the Millennium Challenge Corporation, as well as a government advisor with the Tony Blair Institute, sitting inside of governments in Sierra Leone and Ethiopia, also working in other parts of Africa. My focus during those years was on industrial policy and business environment reforms. More recently, I've worked with Indian state governments and other organizations on issues related to investment, urban economic development, and industrial parks. My motivation to spend my career up until now on this topic came from two places. First, during my childhood, there was a period of time where my dad experienced sustained unemployment, which instilled in my bones the value and dignity that a formal good job offers. And the second is related to my early career experience evaluating anti-poverty programs in developing countries. At that time, I was living and working in Latin America. And through that work, I observed that various non-government actors were trying to fill gaps in public services, for instance, trash collection, that the local government, where I grew up in the U.S., was providing themselves. You know, there was this piecemeal and inadequate substitution for the government, understandably. But it struck me that we collectively need to solve the root problem, which is the failure of government to deliver for its people. So these two experiences led me to focus on economic growth strategy and state capability in graduate school, where my thinking was heavily influenced by people like Danny Roderick, Ricardo Hausmann, and Land Pritchett, amongst others. And these experiences are also directly tied to my interest in collaborating on this podcast series on bottleneck detectives for economic growth in LMICs.
That's a bit of your background, and then you end up co-founding the Growth Teams. Could you tell us a bit about the Growth Teams and the problem that you're trying to solve?
Yeah, in a nutshell, Growth Teams aims to accelerate economic growth in developing countries and create many, many more sector-level success stories that generate exports and jobs at scale. So let me try to maybe unpack that statement a bit more to articulate, you know, why that matters. So in recent decades, economic growth accelerations across various countries have yielded gains in welfare and living standards 1,000 or more times as large as the most effective anti-poverty programs. These growth episodes, as is the case with most sustained rapid growth stories, have been driven by structural transformation, as you alluded to, Oliver, at the beginning. That's about moving people from low to high productivity sectors of the economy and doing so at scale. Economic growth has also led to dramatically improved human well-being. Empirically, we can see that no country has high levels of GDP per capita and low levels of basic welfare as measured by indicators related to health, education, safety, etc. And alternatively, no country has high levels of basic welfare at low levels of GDP per capita, right? So that's all well and good, and that sort of justifies why growth really matters. The question then is how to reliably generate it. Good institutions have been identified by eminent researchers such as Acemoglu and Robinson as a key determinant of long-term development. But my observation has been that a growing literature has pointed to good enough governance as being enough to generate growth. Furthermore, the fact that the same policy idea has hugely different effects across countries. A great example of this is special economic zones, which have done really quite well across a number of Asian countries and not so well in African countries and even in South Asia. So this differential effect suggests that the content of a policy idea itself isn't more important than how that policy idea is translated into the real world. And this translation requires state capability. So that's sort of our motivation at Growth Teams for, you know, why we exist. We sort of feel like there's no magic recipe for solving this state capability problem, and that it in fact is about the process of continuously and iteratively solving problems that really counts. My colleagues and I have seen that political leaders and policymakers in developing countries, they recognize this. They know that their governments often struggle to implement policy, that they don't get enough help sifting through all the policy advice that's out there for them, figuring out what makes sense in their context, and translating it into really concrete micro policy actions, and then following through on that. And this is the critical part of the policy cycle that we feel is deeply neglected by existing players. And we sort of think that more support is required to actually help governments to take effective action rather than merely producing more reports about the laundry list of actions that they should be taking. So in terms of, you know, our approach and why we exist, of course, there are various organizations out there already trying to support governments on these issues around growth, including very big ones like the World Bank. They spend a lot of resources and effort doing analysis and developing strategies and making recommendations to build up this sort of pool of policy ideas for governments to draw from. And I guess my colleagues and I think that this diagnosis of the problem that, you know, there's just not enough of the right evidence or the right institutions aren't in place to promote growth. We think that this diagnosis is incomplete at best. We've seen that there's no shortage of slide decks filled with policy recommendations collecting dust on the shelves of government offices all over the world. And this is recognized by big development players themselves. A 2014 World Bank study indicated that nearly a third of World Bank policy reports were never downloaded, and an additional 40% of reports were downloaded no more than 100 times. So, you know, this approach of producing strategy and analysis and recommendations, we feel that it fundamentally sidesteps the challenge of building government's own capability to implement policy. And the efforts that do exist out there that are ostensibly oriented towards that problem are sort of these typical capacity building programs around classroom style lectures and workshops and so on. And we don't feel like these are rooted in any empirically based view about how people and organizations learn, how they actually learn to do things. Fortunately, I guess our experience is that people are starting to question the status quo approach, especially in light of recent aid cuts. You know, a lot of people out there are seeing that governments themselves need the capability to get stuff done without perpetual support from external actors. And so our take on that problem is to say, hey, we need an apprenticeship model. We think that's a model that's much more fruitful, where we work side by side, form a team with people in government, and take action alongside them to actually put stuff that's written down on paper into practice. And we feel that this is not sort of the traditional approach that's being used currently.
Yeah, it's super interesting. I guess at VoxDev, we do our fair share of putting more policy ideas out into the world. But one thing we've been thinking about, kind of along the lines of what you were saying, is how do those ideas actually get done? So it's great to hear that there's people like you working with governments to try and get things done and put those ideas into action. Could you give us any examples, kind of specifically, of what this involves? Maybe some countries or sectors that you're allowed to talk about where you've worked with governments?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, our mission fundamentally at Growth Teams is to support developing countries to spot and solve bottlenecks to investment, exports, and jobs, all of which we believe lead to economic growth. Connecting to my previous comments, we support governments to translate the plethora of research, policy recommendations, and strategies that they have into tangible actions that they can take, you know, today or next month or whatever it is, you know, now, more or less. Ultimately, you know, our goal is for governments to be able to create their own flywheels for problem solving to promote economic growth. So I'll give an example of, you know, how we've tried to do this in the past. And how we continue to try to work going forward with various governments. Our first project was in Rwanda, where we've already been seeing some promising results. I'll just start with a bit of context about the countries. Rwanda is a small economy that remains heavily dependent on agriculture. It's progressed immensely in its development journey since the 1990s, and it continues to have big ambitions, for example, to become a high-income country by 2050. But to progress towards these ambitions, there are still a number of economic challenges that need to be addressed. Rwanda is a small landlocked country with high transport costs and constrained market access, which means that the traditional export-led manufacturing strategy may not be straightforward for Rwanda to pursue. So, you know, the country and the government is aware of this reality, and so has for years emphasized IT-enabled services as one high potential area that could work for the country and that also skirts the constraints that the country faces. One sector in this space is called business process outsourcing. You can imagine call centers and IT support, which I think all of us and our listeners will be familiar with. This is a sector that's featured in various studies and government strategies throughout the years, dating back more than a decade, actually. But the country still faced a cold start problem of entering into this globally competitive sector with no existing base of firms or industry know-how. So the question is, you know, what did we do? We started working in Rwanda in 2022. And we worked with what's called the Rwanda Development Board, which is the lead investment agency in the country. And in particular, we created a team with the people at RDB who are responsible for driving investment, particularly foreign investment, into the BPO sector. And we immediately started just working hand in hand, step by step, with these staff members of RDB to figure out how do we actually unlock investment into this sector. So, for example, through research, we and the team created a compelling articulation for why a global BPO firm might consider setting up in Rwanda. We then took that investment case and got it in front of firms. We built an investor pipeline of 80 plus prospective investors. We got in touch with all of them, and we facilitated country visits for about a dozen of them. Naturally, throughout this back and forth with investors, there were numerous follow-up questions to address, a bunch of data points to gather, and a range of different policies that we needed to clarify for them. And all of this, we were doing hand-in-hand, step-by-step, with the staff members of RDB. And what we've seen so far is that we can already see results coming to fruition. So thus far, as of now, RDB has attracted three new global firms to set up operations in the country, with a handful more expected soon. As of 2025, 4,000 high-quality jobs have been created in the sector, which is, you know, a non-trivial number of jobs for a country of only, you know, 10, 11, 12 million people, something in that range. And these are also well-paying jobs. So, for instance, entry-level positions are paying $200 to $400 per month, which is something like 2.5 to 5 times the prevailing wage in Rwanda for an equivalent level role. And more senior roles are paying up to $1,500 per month. Now, the actions that I just described that we took alongside the RDB team, you know, they sound really simple, and in some ways they really are. They are sort of simple and mundane things, but the difference really is in actually doing them consistently and iteratively over a sustained period of time. One thing I want to emphasize is that the government did this work. You know, we were there by their side, helping them, you know, supporting them with various pieces of sort of analysis, knowledge, you know, motivation, etc. But fundamentally, our approach was to facilitate and to provide support structures so that they could actually do the work. And so I guess for us, the secret sauce, the magic, so to speak, is getting individuals and teams on this virtuous cycle of learning by doing so that they can pull themselves up the learning curve. So our hope and our hypothesis actually is that you know, key people in RDB now have this deeper experience with problem solving to bring in investment that they can then apply to try to develop new sectors of the economy that will then cumulatively promote this structural transformation process that we spoke about before.
I think it's pretty obvious at this point that I've picked a good co-host for this series on growth. But what are we going to be covering? And who are some of the people that we're going to be speaking to?
We're going to be learning about how the government and private sector drove investment and growth of the electronics and medical devices sector in Costa Rica.
We're also going to be asking Piero Ghezzi, who was the Minister of Production in Peru, all about his experience in government and his now famous Mesas Ejecutivos method.
We'll learn about the state government of Tamil Nadu in India and how they played an integral role in driving the development of a range of different sectors from light manufacturing, such as footwear, all the way to electronics, as well as high-skilled services.
And that's just a preview. There's other episodes we're also working on so that we make sure we cover stories from Latin America, Africa, and Asia. And I guess one thing to highlight is that in each episode, we're going to be asking how critical policies that helped specific sectors succeed were conceived, designed, and implemented.
If policymakers use economic research, and if so, how and when evidence informed policymaking?
How governments worked with private sectors to unlock the constraints that were holding back growth.
And how government got stuff done in the face of political constraints and state capability deficits.
Yeah. So to summarize, there'll be a lot of talk about evidence use, bottlenecks, and getting stuff done, which Kartik, you've kind of talked about having experience doing the dirty work of growth. If this sounds like a series that you'd be interested in, the first episode, our interview on Costa Rica, is now live, and you can go and check that out wherever you get your podcasts. It would really help us if you give us a 5-star rating or a thumbs up wherever you're listening.
We've even recently launched a website to feature dozens of these stories. We've called the website the Export Boom Atlas, where we try to unpack within each success story, what the government did, what private actors did, and sometimes what external actors did to enable these sectoral takeoffs. So just to close, I'd encourage our listeners to take a look and submit any examples to the Export Boom Atlas that they know about that aren't currently included in the site.